Professor Ndungu from Kenya to comment on this, and later on Anders Borg, Ulrika Modere and Anna Riot for a panel discussion, and later on, of course, for you yourself also to put questions and ideas. But first, Professor Ndungu, we have now listened to the outcome and the ideas and results of this study on Africa Development Bank and its future, and Chris also landed in the issue of governance. Now, as a starting point, I will ask you, from a borrowing country and also a shareholder, how do you view the role of Africa Development Bank in the Kenyan context? Please, you have the floor.
Yeah, that's fine. If it's possible, you can see me. But, I'm above average height where I come from, but thank you very much, and thank you very much for being invited here. I'm very happy, and I think I appreciate that. And as you said, this is the third week of decompressing after leaving the Central Bank of Kenya, after 8 years of work as a governor. It's the most, strange thing that happened to my life, because I didn't know I would last for a week. But I was there lasting for almost a decade. The problem is that I stopped thinking about economic growth, and I had to focus more on financial development and monetary policy. But now I'm coming back to reclaim my life. But I think today I will not talk about that. I was invited to talk about the aspect, the role of African Development Bank in terms of African countries as a shareholder and also financing development. But also I thought maybe I should also add and say, since we are talking about the new Africa, what is the newness in Africa? I would like to comment on that. But the third one I thought I would do is to comment on the report. I didn't see the report before. I only saw the report here. But having recent, I thought I would have some thoughts. But what I've realized is that I can combine what I think is African newness with the role of African Development Bank in terms of financing Africa. But let me first of all go into the African Development Bank. Why was it formed? First of all, it was formed. Its mission is actually to promote sustainable economic growth and reduce poverty in Africa. And so it means that any assessment of African Development Bank will be based on what is its success story on that. But of course, that's a big agenda. Maybe what I would borrow from the presentation that Christopher has made is to say that it's not only to finance that, but also to be a catalyst in terms of providing the convening power, and also a catalyst and credibility, because so many of the African countries are small in terms of managing what happens in the market, but could be a convener and creates an environment for credibility. And for me, those are the examples I would like to give maybe later on. But more importantly, it's actually, when we talk about Africa, is the whole idea of what is needed to achieve sustainable development. Today, when you talk about poverty, you have to actually to look at Africa, and I think you give some statistics. I think 46.8% of sub-Saharan African population lives below $1.25 per day. It's compared to the global average, which is about 14.5%. So you can see that poverty is quite rampant. The bottom line is that how do you resolve this issue? How do you resolve this poverty problem? Because it's not really a resource infusion problem. It's also a management problem, a resource management problem, an ideas management problem, an institutional problem. So essentially, we have several dimensions. So essentially, African Development Bank can be seen as a vehicle to harness those resources, but also to manage the thinking behind how to manage those resources, the infusion of those resources, but also to provide what I call, or to try to resolve what I call binding constraints. We start with binding constraints with the infrastructure gap, for example. It's really a binding constraint. And I can tell you that even the proportion of African Development Bank funding has gone into those sectors which provide or which produce this binding constraint to development. And infrastructure is one of them. But the problem is that are there hard rules in terms of how the allocation of that budget should go? And those are issues that we can debate. But now let me talk about, when we talk about infrastructure in Africa, it's a different developmental debate. more intricate than what we see. I think in the recent past, introduced work in the central bank was also to write about binding constraints in Africa. Because essentially you find that most of the time, transactions cost in Africa are so high. And Africa is actually, the markets in Africa are very transactions heavy. And that's one side of it, the cost itself. But the other side of it is that the complementarity between those public investments that are necessary to reduce transactions cost and even enhance the profitability of the private sector is actually lost. And maybe that is where the debate should focus. Finance, infrastructure gap, that will reduce transactions cost. That is going to enhance profitability of the private sector. You can see that trail of thinking in terms of development debate could be very, very important. But now, I wanted to focus my first point, my first set of issues to Kenya. And why Kenya? Because it's really an average country in the African continent. Average in the sense that it's coastal, resource poor, but also sits in a very strategic position. You only need to solve a few things, a few problems, and then you are there. Kenya will be there. The first thing I did was when the new government came into power about 2013, was to present to the president a slide of five slides in terms of what I think the development debate should be. And one of the points, one of the slides, I argued that Kenya does not need even to discover oil. You know, there's East Africa with oil discoveries, and everybody is so happy about it. And everybody starts now proclaiming ownership of this and that. I actually say, you don't need to discover this. We have five landlocked countries. That includes now Ethiopia and South Sudan, plus then the traditional ones, Uganda, Burundi, and Rwanda. They are relatively resource rich. What you really need is to create avenues or routes for their imports and their export routes. Create airports that are going to be efficient. Create road networks. Once you have done that, you realize that Kenya doesn't even need to discover oil. That's why I'm saying it is not hard rock like the others. It is coastal, but resource poor, but very strategic. And those are the things that we come down to and saying, where does the African development comes in? Until recently, the technology of financing regional projects, nobody ever thought about it. Bilateral donors and even multilateral donors had limitations in terms of financing regional projects. It is the African Development Bank that has started that. It's not only providing resources, but providing the organizational capability. And that is what I think we need now to come into and try to encourage. So when I look at Kenya, and even look at the resources that have been provided in the energy sector, the transport sector, by the African Development Bank, including even other sectors like social, I find that it has been quite important, but given the resource requirement, it has been very, very minimal in terms of support. And that's why when I look at Kenya, it's a characteristic of any other country in the African region. And you can see that it is a promising effect, but it's so retro. We need to look at it in terms of, is it the resource capability that we want to look at, better management, and even better credibility. Now, when I look at what African Development Bank has contributed in Kenya in terms of overall development since 1967, I look at infrastructure projects. The proportion of the bank group investment in Kenya, like for example transport, has been like 34.3% of what has the outlay so far since 1967. Energy 17%, agriculture 10%, water supply and even sanitation about 11%. Social sector is about 7%, and you can see that's the contribution in terms of what has really happened in investment in that area. And you can see that it's quite minimal. The estimate so far in Kenya is $4.4 billion annually for the next decade for it to improve to close the infrastructure gap. That is quite massive. When I looked at the statistics you provided, that's one country which is average. You can imagine those that are below average, how much they require. Then the next thing is to ask, then how do we deal with infrastructure gap? And then deal with other issues. And that is where maybe the contribution would be in terms of trying to shape up for the future, to shape up the African development contribution in the future. But what I want to emphasize is that increasingly we should see the role of the African Development Bank as a convener to connect sectors in terms of helping out what is really happening in the region. Most countries have come up with the idea that you can actually come up with PPP projects, public-private partnership projects. But who gives credibility? You talked about AAA. This AAA is not only an African Development Bank problem. We even find ourselves, even in central bank, you cannot invest reserves in less than AAA countries. So you can see what is really happening. Now, what I'm emphasizing here is that we need to look beyond the resources to talk about organizational and credibility, because essentially infusion of resources is not always the main thing. Let me turn to the second level. What makes new Africa? What makes it new in Africa right now? Why are you emphasizing the newness of Africa? We're talking about Africa rising, because Africa has some of the frontier markets. But more importantly, the middle income in Africa is rising. The middle income group, the population of middle income people in Africa is rising. It's about 350 million and rising. You can see that is much, much larger than the population of America. But it means that there's a market, there's a potential market, but how do we harness the market? There has to be trade and developing markets. Then the whole idea is the growth potential will come from those markets. But Africa does not trade with itself. The infrastructure to move from one country to the next is actually going to be very, very problematic. So when we talk about Africa rising, we are talking about there are opportunities, but also there are challenges. And that is one of the most important things in terms of defining the future. But the challenges also come in terms of not only the infrastructure gap, but also the youth unemployment. You know, we used to talk about Africa, the Arab Springs, and right now maybe we may need to focus in terms of the youth and the time bomb that we have in Africa for the youth and the poverty levels. But more importantly, something that I keep mentioning is the weak institutions. I know you gave me 1 minute, but because I came early in the morning, let me use 1.5 minutes. The weak institutions in Africa is actually more problematic than even resource infusion. I emphasize institutions because since I went to the central bank in 2007, that is 80 years ago, one of the things I looked at is how do we make a strong institution? From the point of view of a regulator, is because you're going to define the rules of the game. And that's very, very important for the market. And on the other hand, you're also going to define the appropriate incentives. And for a regulator, you don't only look at the incentives, you also look at the penalties so that they are going to encourage prudent behavior in the marketplace. And that I've seen that for the last 8 years that we have created a very strong regulator of the central bank, but I've also seen the banks, commercial banks in Kenya have become very strong. That's why everybody now is talking about Pan-African banks in Africa, and they are also talking about regional banks because Kenyan banks have covered the East African region very well. What has made that work is purely looking at the institutional aspect. But we have to go back and say, what are the other important institutions in Africa that are actually inhibiting its growth? And one of them, painfully so, is the legal framework, the judiciary, all that, because that's where most of the things go wrong. So, in essence, African Development Bank should come in and support those institutions. The third point I wanted to look at is the potential that is there for resource infusion, but the potential also for supporting the market. Let me give you an example. In November last year, we kicked off the East African payment system, which what we wanted was to make sure that it can facilitate trade. SWIFT, that is real-time gross settlements, can be connected to each other, both by commercial banks and the central banks. And we say, let's kick off. But we realized that Rwanda and Burundi could not join us because they didn't have the national payments infrastructure to connect to the totality of that. And then in the end, we said, oh, how does it work? We said, those who are ready can kick off. All of a sudden, we started using local currency to fund accounts. Then all of a sudden, we said, now how do we let others catch up? African Development Bank came in to provide resources, grants, to build the national payments infrastructure. It's not a lot of money, But you can imagine the magic they did. So it's a question of not only resource infusion, but also an idea that can help the markets work. And you can see the totality of that region is going to work in terms of facilitating efficient payments and settlement systems, facilitating trade across, just because of some few ideas that have been promoted and you come and support. But then, of course, Africa is permeated by different. We have, on one hand, developed markets like South Africa, frontier markets, countries with huge resource base like Angola, Nigeria, and that kind of. But on the other hand, we have fragile states. They need specific support. And even within the same specific countries, we have fragmented markets. And that's why we supported, for example, making finance work for Africa. I remember one of the things that I did in 2009 was actually to go to the African Development Bank to give presentations in terms of how we managed to raise resources for public investment in Kenya through domestic bonds. And we called it innovative financing of public investment. But I'm not saying that that success is good enough. That success is good, but that success also has costs. Because in the end, and that's why, because you mentioned the sovereign bond, we find that in Africa, it is the governments themselves that drive interest structure. Because government borrowing, government securities are risk-free. They form the floor of risk-free assets. And everything else is priced above that. Then you find that banks in Africa make a lot of money. Make a lot of profits. That's what one of the criticism I get from the media is that you did so well in the central bank, but you did not lower interest rates. And I said, now you're telling me to fight the Minister for Finance, who wanted the funds regardless of the cost, because he had pressure, political pressure, which for me as a central bank governor could not understand. But all the same, the outcome in Africa is such that securities market, government securities form the bulk of the bond market, although you see vibrancy, but it means that it drives interest rates. Now, there are two dimensions to that. First, the interest rate structure, the market returns on investments is actually dominated by government finances on one hand. On the other hand, there are short-term finances. What Africa needs is long-term finance. So essentially, it's a question of trying to see how do we structure the African Development Bank and others to join in to provide long-term finance, which is actually required. And that is what the strategy should focus on. But finally then, is actually to say, we need all that, but Africa needs to trade with each other. For Africa to trade with each other, it has to communicate with each other. But things have changed. Why we are seeing Africa rising is that for the last 10 years, or slightly more than a decade, we have seen very strong macroeconomic environment. We have seen emerging strong institutions, and that's why we have emerging economies and frontier economies. It's much easier to travel across Africa today. I remember working with the AERC starting from 2003. Sometimes I would go to Paris for me to travel to Tunis. Okay, I'm in Nairobi. For me to travel to Tunis, the best thing is to go to Paris and back. I'm in Cameroon, I want to go to Tunis, I have to go to Paris. Two hours from Paris, I'm in Tunis. Okay? Today, you don't have to do that. Okay? But we still need to do more in terms of communicating and trading with each other. That is where the investments will come in. That is where vibrancy in the market is going to come in. But it is the credibility of the economies in Africa in terms of having that long-term strategy that is going to win the day. At the end of the day, I'm still taking the ball back to ourselves in terms of creating strong institutions that are going to support and harness the resources that come from the African Development Bank. We have seen a change in the last 10 years in terms of focus of the African Development Bank in terms of even looking at the projects. For example, the Kenyan case is a good example in East Africa. One road itself has made a difference. Even the World Bank came to look at how highways should be constructed to last the country for 15 years. It has been one example, but it has been very good. But now the next thing is, how do you finance regional infrastructure projects? We have seen, for example, connectivity between Ethiopia and Kenya in terms of power cables. We have seen the upset which is coming up, but we have seen difficulties in terms of financing. The African Development Bank has financed the road between Kenya and Tanzania through Arusha and having a common border point. What we really need in Africa is to think now outside the borders for us to encourage trade. And that is what is we really need to encourage, so that we are going to support building markets development. And finally, at the end of the day, you have to finance or support market development. It is market development that is going to support African growth. I'm happy about the role and the support we have been given, myself personally, in terms of ideas. But I'm also happy that we should preach that African Development Bank should not only say we are providing resources, but also to provide interventions in the market to help the market grow. Thank you very much, and sorry for overrunning the time.
Thanks a lot, Professor Ndunga. And I think what you mentioned the most at the end of your intervention was about regional projects. And I think it was Financial Times a week ago, I read that for the first time ever, you can now drive from Cape to Cairo on paved roads. So that is also a kind of infrastructure improvement. Now, next, Anders Borg, I would like to invite you to address the issue of what role could and should ADB play in the new financial system? Please.
Well, let me take the starting point of what the governor said. I think we should realize that the period of 8 years as a governor of Kenya has been a very strong showing for what the change, what kind of magnitude of change we've seen in Africa. First of all, East Africa and Kenya has gone through a difficult period in terms of inflation, because there was an inflation shock to the upwards. The central banks dealt with it, as central banks should. Price stability was upheld, and everything came back to normal without these price shocks feeding through to inflation expectations and creating a lot of turmoil. So in terms of inflation targeting, I must say that the Bank of Kenya and the other central banks in East Africa has made tremendous progress. Let's also be clear that this is the period when M-Pesa has come to the financial system in Kenya. I can say from our own experience in Kinnevik, we are running Tigo, which is the second largest operator in Tanzania, which is now also basically all involved in the M-Pesa system. And what we are now trying to do is to bring this knowledge over to Latin America. We also run quite large telecommunication business. And the reception that we are receiving from banks and central bankers outside of Africa, I would say, is slightly different from the support that the governor in Kenya and the other governors in the rest of East Africa has given to the expansion of a world-leading system when it comes for consumers dealing with their payments and their banking through the mobile system. It was very clear when we had the meeting in Davos that it was the African governors that was teaching and defending the M-Pesa system against the governors from European and Latin American and North American banks and central banks. So here I think it's clearly a leadership that Africa has taken, not the least during the governor's period at the Bank of Kenya. My perspective on Africa is from two different roles. One is Kinnevik. We are running the telecommunication operator Tigo in Tanzania and quite some other, quite a large number of other African countries. But we're also invested in 33 different African countries with 22 different companies. So if you look at e-commerce, we are probably the biggest or one of the two, three biggest operators in Africa with brands such as Congo and Jumia. We are basically normally working with local entrepreneurs that we are providing a lot of governance support and investment to be able to grow in these kind of new, fantastically interesting markets. I'm also involved in the work with the World Economic Forum, where we are doing a project under the leadership of Gordon Brown to try to facilitate more investments, particularly infrastructure, and try to bring all together all of the stakeholders. And I'm also involved in the kind of more policy-oriented discussions that we will be hosting, not the least at the World Economic Forum regional meeting in Johannesburg in June. So that's my kind of starting point here. Let me say that I agree with both the author and the governor on the basic African story. We should be positive about Africa. There are so many different things that has reinforced the growth levels over the last few years. Growth has actually been quite resilient during the international crisis. It's also been quite resilient even then when we have seen some of the commodity prices come back a little bit. If we take a longer-term perspective, the demographic push to growth from Africa will be enormous. This is a continent that will host more than 2 billion people in a couple of decades. And I think the reasons why we're seeing this progress is basically there's been a huge amount of political transformation. There's a much stronger emphasis on openness, both in terms of the domestic markets, but also for inter-regional trade and participating in the world markets. And then we obviously also have the whole natural resource game, where it's quite clear that Africa, this fantastic and huge continent, we have only seen a very, very small proportion of the natural resources that is likely to be used when we go forward. I think there is one thing with the kind of Chinese lesson for poverty reduction and growth that we read maybe to reemphasize a little bit when we're talking about Africa. China has had a couple of different features in its extremely successful model. One was the openness towards export, an orientation towards manufacturing. The second was a very, very strong emphasis on foreign direct investments, both from expat Chinese, but also from the big multinational companies coming to invest and produce in China. The third was that this kind of policy was reinforced by basically an undervalued currency for quite some decades. This led to an investment-driven growth based on domestic saving ratios. So basically you saw extremely high investment ratios in China and many of the Asian countries over a long time period, facilitated by their own savings. So you had a very, very strong growth impetus from manufacturing, foreign direct investments and openness that was built on a rather stable basis, because the domestic savings made them not that dependent on foreign borrowing and not that depending on current account deficits to finance their growth. I know that some in the international community, not the least the US, have pointed out that the combination of undervalued currencies and domestic savings is a model that probably is not sustainable. We are now seeing a transformation of that. But this is a huge difference, because in Africa we don't have to the same degree the high saving ratios. We don't have the same broad-based foreign direct investments as we've seen in Asia. So I think the first thing we should think about is how do we facilitate, if I would say that, a Chinese development in terms of investments and domestic savings. How can we make the African market being more attractive in terms of foreign direct investments, and also how can we build it more on the savings that is done by the Africans? If we can solve that kind of key question, then we could see maybe a repetition of what we've seen in Asia. Secondly, I would argue, and that probably calls for quite a lot of policy reforms that takes us much broader than the African Development Bank. My second point when it comes to policies to reinvigorate growth, I would argue that big infrastructure investments is necessary, and the scale has been well articulated by many others. But they have to go hand in hand with structural reforms in the domestic markets, particularly the transport sector. We will not get all of the benefits from investing in ports, roads and railways if we don't have a transport system that is actually working in terms of regulatory structures, barriers to entry and competition, because the costs today for transportation in most of Africa are extremely high, and partly is due to the quality of roads, but it's also partly due to the regulatory structures. You have costs in East Africa that I think is 2 or 3 times what we have in the US per kilometer, but they are 6-7 times higher than they are in Pakistan. Pakistan, where I would argue that you probably have more similar road qualities. So the fact that there are too many roadblocks, that are too much cumbersome processes at the borders, and because there are too many limitations when it comes to barriers of entry in the transport sector, there has to be overall reforms. Having said this, that you need to get the self-sustained growth going based on domestic investment, and that you need to also do structural reforms to get the markets working. I do think that the African Development Bank is a well-functioning institution and that it can play a very, very crucial role when it comes to providing support for investment. The underlying tone of the report is basically that there is a lot of opportunities to make the African Development Bank work better. I must say, I actually think that it is a crucial institution when it comes to discussions on growth and investments in Africa as it is. So to my mind, it's a well-functioning institution that could potentially play a bigger role. So I would probably be slightly less critical to how the African Development Bank has worked than the water. I must though say that I'm to a large degree in agreement on the policy conclusions that are launched here. And let me now just underline a few. The African Development Bank should have a broader opportunity to work with investments, and probably also to leverage this investment when it comes to private sector involvement. What the author is saying is that we should probably create something similar to IFC, the investment bank that the World Bank is running. I think that could be kind of a constructive proposal, because there is a lot of investments that are willing to engage with the African community. And IFC style of institution with stronger private sector governance and stronger private sector operations could be a vehicle that would really leverage the money that has been put into the African Development Bank. I also think that the mandate should be kept very broad. It's very important to work with the least developed countries, but it's also important that the African Development Bank can be a partner to the whole of the growing Africa, and also to the countries that are showing some progress. So I think in terms of the shareholders from particularly the OECD countries, I think there should be a broader openness to broaden the mandate and to facilitate a more constructive role, a bigger role for the bank. I also think that you probably have a need to streamline the executive procedures here. I do have a huge confidence in the people that has been running the African Development Bank over the last few years, but maybe in terms of the OECD perspective, there is a need to step back a little bit, to think more in terms of governance and governance structures rather than detailed control and too many procedures that makes this a very cumbersome process. So to my mind, I would say that the African Development Bank can play a very crucial role. I would also argue that it's quite a well-functioning institution as it is, but when it comes to the policy proposals, I would support all three of them as I see as the main. I must admit that I'm much more skeptical against the reasoning on AAA. I think you should keep your AAA rating as long as you can, given that markets will never be forgiving for anybody that is perceived as less than incredible. So to my mind, it's an important report, and I think we're actually at the juncture where the African Development Bank has an opportunity to play a much, much broader role. And I think Sweden should, the Swedish government, together with the other OECD countries, try to think about what they can do to give a little bit more of flexibility to the bank to play this crucial role. So thank you very much.